We'll get started in a few more seconds. Let me set up the recording. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, the law office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. This is our community conference call for the first community conference call this year, January 3rd, 2013. I wish you all a very happy new year. As usual, this community conference call is being recorded. By participating in this call, you do not become our client, nor do we become your lawyers. You may want to keep your identity confidential when you ask follow-up questions. You can make up a name if you like. Like I said, this call is being recorded, so it will be made publicly available. All questions are being answered to the best of our ability. They are not a substitute for a one-on-one consultation. Let me get started. I will start again, as usual, by first answering all the questions that have been posted. Then we'll do a follow-up on those questions, and then any new questions. I don't expect this call to last more than 45 to 50 minutes, maybe somewhere in that neighborhood. Okay, let's begin by starting with the first question from A. Agar 2003, who wants to know, they have a multiple non-immigrant visa on their passports. They've got an F2 and an H1B. Okay. So their F2 is valid with DS, which is duration of status, up to the year 2016. H1B valid till 2015. H1B was stamped for the fiscal year 2012 in early November 2012, but they did not travel or work on it. They are still working for the same employer who was the H1B employer. Current location is in India. Recently, they used their F2 visa to enter USA for a personal vacation. Well, before I get started with your questions, I want to caution you. For you to use an F2 visa, the F1 visa holder must be in USA and pursuing their program of study. Because if they're not doing that, then that F2 visa is not good. That should not be used. Okay? The questions that you have. Number one, if my current employer, which is also the H-1B petitioner, finds another similar position for the same location and U.S. client so that no H-1B amendment is needed, do I need to travel outside USA to start working on the H-1B? So if they are on F-2 in USA, do they need to travel outside? The answer is yes, because when you enter on F-2, you get an I-94 valid for F-2. You need an I-94 valid for H-1, and you can do that one of the two ways, either applying for a change of status within USA, which is like doing the H-1 all over again, or you can go outside and come back on H-1 visa, which you already have on your passport. Can I do a change of status using I-539? No, that's not the right form. It's almost like filing a new case. Okay, the fees are a little different, but the government looks at the entire case all over again, and you run the same risk of denial as what you had when you filed your first H-1. Okay? If the current employer finds another position different from the original position, that is, an H-1B amendment is needed, how much time would it take? Well, you can do it premium processing. Am I supposed to go outside the country and come back? Same answer. If you're doing an amendment, in the amendment, you can ask for a change of status. So it can be made into one petition, so you don't have to go outside. Or you can get the H-1B amendment, leave USA, re-enter using the same visa. Okay. Can I start working without going outside USA once the papers are received? No, you cannot. You've got to wait until the H-1 is adjudicated, and either you get the H-1 I-94 through an amendment amendment within USA, or you go outside and come back with the visa stamping. If I were to find another employer in USA, would they be able to transfer? Yes, they can. One of the other employers told me that they require pay stubs, not in this case. How does this differ from filing a completely new petition versus a transfer? For your purposes, all you need to know is a transfer is also like filing a new H-1, but you will not be subject to the quota. So you can do a transfer. How much time it's going to take? You can premiere it. In case I need to go outside the country, can I drive to Canada and enter again on H-1B? Well, you know, that's a little problematic because if you drive to Canada, make sure you surrender your I-94 so that when you come in, you get a new I-94. Or you can travel by air to Canada and surrender your I-94. You don't need to go back to India to effect a re-entry. Okay? Oh, nice. Here is a spam post. I'll take care of that later. Working on EAD, but travel using H-4 visa. My husband's employer has applied for I-485. This is from SOG. So they have applied an I-485 as a derivative. It's currently pending. EAD is approved, and they'll start working for a Fortune 500 company from next week. My husband has no plans to use his EAD. Okay. I have not applied for advance parole, but I need to travel in Feb midweek. Even if I apply for AP now, I may not get it before I travel. Would it be possible for me to enter the country again using your H-4 visa? Yes. Yes. You can enter using your H-4 visa stamp, but the moment you start using your EAD, so this is how it works. Before you leave, you will be using your EAD. Okay. You're no longer on H-4. You are in authorized period of stay. Authorized period of stay, which means 485 pending in your case. Okay. So the moment you start using EAD, you go into the authorized period of stay. When you leave USA and re-enter using H-4, till the time you start using your EAD again, you are on H-4. But the moment you start using EAD, you're back on authorized period of stay. This is perfectly legal. I don't see any problem with it. Is my adjustment application deemed abandoned if I travel outside country without AP using EAD? The answer is no. Okay. In this particular case, the answer is no, because you are protected by some of the observations from the Cronin Memorandum, C-R-O-N-I-N, Cronin Memorandum. It's a memorandum back from the 80s that says if you have an H-1 or H-4 visa and you re-enter, you are still in authorized period of stay. Actually, to rephrase that, you will not lose your I-485. You will be on H-4, but you will not lose your 485. Okay? If you have any doubts about that, you can also contact CBP, Customs and Border Protection, and they are usually pretty good about answering questions. I'm fairly certain you have no problem. Okay? So, oh, that looks like a repeat of the same question. All right. Then EB1 and other queries. Wishes for a prosperous new year. Same to you. Thank you. And they want to know about the L1A. Currently, they are on L1A. Then they've given their education particulars. And then their questions. Since I'm currently on L1A visa and carrying on managerial activities, does that help me with EB1? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's perfect. Because you would be eligible based upon the fact that you are here on L1A. No problem. So normally, L1A normally automatically makes it a very good case for EB1 international managers or executives. As per the EB2 classification that mentions a bachelor's degree with at least 5 years of experience, I may also qualify for EB2? Yes. If you have a BE, which you do, and you have about 6+ years of experience, that should also qualify for you for an EB2. But why would you want to do that? You are qualified for an EB1. Okay? Because EB2 will take you, what, 6, 7, 8 years? EB1 will take you less than a year. Okay? Plus, EB1 does not require PROM filing. It's a lot simpler case. And you have that in the question number 4. Would it be correct to state that EB1 does not require PROM? And the answer is yes. For EB1, you directly go to the I-140 stage. if you think I should possibly do something more within a year to get into EB1 category, I don't see why there should be a problem. Since you've worked 1 year outside USA as a manager or executive, you're working for the same company on L1A, you should be able to do an EB1. Number five, as mentioned in one of your videos, I looked into the flcdatacenter.com site for wage determination. L1 people don't have those restrictions. Those are only for H1 and green card and some other visas, but not for L1. Is there any limitation on the number of times green card can be renewed? And is there any benefit to remain on green card forever by renewals without applying for U.S. citizenship? I personally am biased maybe a little bit. I don't think you should remain indefinitely. Well, you can remain indefinitely on green card if you want. But I think it's a good idea to get U.S. citizenship and become firmly established in USA. You see, I'll give you an example. If you are a U.S. citizen and you were to leave USA and go live in Kenya for 5 years or Australia for 5 years, nothing happens. You're still a U.S. citizen. You can't do that as a green card holder. You do that, you lose your green card. There are some exceptions to that, but normally the best thing you can do is not abandon your permanent residence, otherwise it's gone. So personally, I would apply for a U.S. naturalization. Imineet 2000 says, you know, I cannot get non-availability from India, and I'm a Pakistani citizen. Well, we have that problem on both sides. India and Pakistan are not on talking terms 9 times out of 10, so it's impossible for citizens of one country to get non-availability of birth certificates from another country. Now, how do you deal with that? What you do is, we have this situation all the time, and what we do is we point out to the sections of Foreign Affairs Manual as well as U.S. State Department publications that show that India and Pakistan don't have a good diplomatic relationship. Although USCIS already knows that, but you can just reiterate that. You can research on the web and you'll be able to find government sources that clearly say that. I think there'll be country reports. I think that's one of the things we cite. State Department prepares country reports. You can take a look at those and see if you know, there's information there. And that's all you should need. Once you have that, then you get two affidavits from people who were alive at the time you were born. People who were alive at the time you were born. Okay? You get two affidavits saying that they personally know that you were born on such and such day, and you should be okay with that. Okay? Next question is Sumit 6A. This month I changed from L1 to H1, but I have not a visa. They don't have a visa stamp. H1 has been approved. I'm still working with the old company on L1. Well, first of all, if there has been a change of status, you see, when you apply for H1, you can apply it two ways. You could apply it with only saying, I just want H1 approval, then I'll go get my visa stamp whenever I'm ready, or you can apply it with a change of status. If your status has been changed from L1 to H1, you are now working illegally because you are on H1, not L1. Okay? So that's the first issue you have to deal with. If you indeed have an H1 change of status, you are working illegally. Look into that, please. Next question. Can I change my wife and child status from L2 to H4 by myself? You can. I cannot tell you the forms. I mean, I can tell you the forms, but I can't help you fill them. You should file form I-539, read the instructions, follow the instructions. Whatever the fees is, just follow whatever is on the government website. Okay? Now, you asked me specific questions. I can't answer questions on how to fill forms because if you look at the bottom of the form, it says if somebody else helped you fill this form, they should sign at the bottom. I'm not going to do that, so I cannot help you fill the form. But I can tell you generically certain information that could be applicable to your questions. The last question that you asked, that I can kind of tell you the information on this. A dependent does not have to support themselves, okay? And typically, they are dependent upon the primary applicant, and that is usually enough. A statement, et cetera, should be enough it shouldn't require too much proof of that. Okay. This is the extent to which I can help you fill the forms or give you the information that is needed. Okay. Next question is Sam 0810, who wants to know about EB3 to EB2 porting. They are in the process of changing from EB3 to EB2. Applied for labor in March 2012. Got an audit in July. Responded to it. I think you mean the Department of Labor, not USCIS. So got an RFE again. It may be a follow-up audit, not an RFE. Yeah, it looks like a follow-up audit. That the ads were not clear. So you responded within a week, now waiting for the response. How much time does USCIS take? I think you're talking about Department of Labor. I can't predict that. I really don't know. Our website, if you go to immigration.com, let me see if I can... if you go to immigration.com and you look right here in this area, it says processing times and status checks, and you click here, all the processing times are here, including perm, audit, etc. So you can look at that. Okay. I don't know how much time it's going to take. If they don't respond in another 2-3 months, can I apply for fresh labor? You can, but why would you want to? And it's usually not a good idea to apply for a new labor when there is an audit pending. Okay. Then I have a BS degree, then some postgraduate diplomas. What are my chances of getting I-140 approval? I don't know. Evaluators have to sit down with their lawyers and decide what is best. If my EB2 is denied, what happens to my EB3? If it is done right, your EB3 should remain unaffected. So it depends upon whether or not your lawyers have planned this whole thing properly. So if it is planned well, I don't see any problem that should happen with your already approved EB3. Okay? SWE82 wants to know, I'm working for the green card sponsoring company. Priority date is 2008. Working for a client. 485 is pending for more than a year. Job is unstable. You got a new job which is similar to the current one. I telecommute for the present job. And so I intend to keep both the jobs for a few months to see which one is better. I'm on H-1 with the present employer, but no visa stamp. My EAD is valid for 2 years, and I plan to start using EAD. I plan to do AC-21 if I plan to stick to the new job. My questions are, number one, if I start working for the new job on EAD, am I on EAD? The answer is yes. You're not on H-1 anymore. Should I let the employer know about it? Well, that's such a difficult question to answer. Knowing just the way USCIS thinks, I would say normally, yeah, but, you know, it's a very marginal issue. I don't think it's a big deal if you don't let them know and you're just doing it for a month or 2 months. If you want to play it absolutely by the book, you should inform them. But in your particular situation, because we are trying to make a balance between losing a job and, you know, obeying an imaginary requirement of the law. Really, it is the employer's job to prepare the I-9s where your employment information goes. It is not your job to inform them on whether or not using EAD. Personally, I don't think it's necessary. Okay? Is it legal to have 2 full-time jobs? Absolutely. No problem. I actually give an example of one of our clients who had 3 full-time jobs. The question is, how do you do that? There's not 120 hours in a week. Well, this guy was a system administrator, and all he had to do was be on standby. So basically, he could do three full-time jobs at the same time. New job people want to sign an employment agreement. That's an issue of contract. You should talk with a lawyer in the state where the contract is effective. Okay? So that's really a state law issue. I cannot comment about that. Isn't this the same question? Yeah, it's the same question. For some reason, this question got repeated three times. I'll go on to the next one. EB1 requirements. My husband is a recent PhD graduate in electrical and computer engineering from a reputed university in Florida. 6 papers and citations. Is he qualified for EB1? Probably not. There's a lot more to EB1 than just a few publications. I'll give you an example. Actually, I want to do a video on this. I've been meaning to do that. Last year I planned it, but I never got around to it. I want to do a video on national interest waivers for physicians, national interest waivers for non-physicians, and EB1, outstanding researcher as well as extraordinary ability. Okay. I just by what you have told me, I don't think he would qualify. But you can do this. Send me his resume through the Contact Us form on our website. I'll take a look at it. Okay? We don't charge for resume review, so you can always send me a resume, and I'll spend a few minutes going over it with him. Next question is RCATA 2011. H-1B denied, I-94 expired, my options. Employer filed 7th-year extension based upon approved I-140. I-94 expired 30th September. Expecting a denial this week. Okay. Questions. I did not get any RFE. Is there a possibility of human error that the message on the website was incorrect? The answer is yes, there is a possibility. Not very likely, but it can happen. If I receive a notice of intent to deny denial, what is the max number of days I can stay? Not even one day. Technically, once the case is denied, see, notice of intent to revoke or deny does not change anything. Once it is actually denied, you have no grace period. You are required to leave right away, but you don't incur any permanent damage unless you are put in deportation. You don't incur any permanent damage for 180 days. After 180 days, you're automatically barred from entering USA for 6 months. I'm sorry, for 3 years. If you continue to stay here unlawfully after I-94, well, let me rephrase that, after the denial of the H-1, you become subject to 10-year bar. Let me take a minute to explain this process to you. If somebody's H-1 is, like yours was, expiring on 30th September 2012. They filed their application. It was received by USCIS on 29th September. As long as the application is pending, they are authorized to stay, and they are authorized to work for up to 8 months, well, 240 days actually. So they can continue working for 240 days, unless the case is denied earlier. Once the case is denied and we have crossed 30th September, the period of unlawful presence begins from the date of the denial. 180 days after that, subject to 3-year bar. 1 year after that, subject to 10-year bar. I hope that makes it clear. Okay? So, and also learn to distinguish between out of status and unlawfully present. Sometimes you can be out of status. For example, if you're a student and you work without authorization, but your I-94 says DS. You violated status, but you're not unlawfully present. Unlawfully present is what the 3-year, 10-year bar attaches to. Okay? And normally, rule of thumb, not always true, there are other problems. It's a very complicated area of the law. Normally, if the I-94 expires, that's when the unlawful presence begins. But sometimes, like in a case like yours, the unlawful presence time gets extended because you filed a timely petition for extension. Okay. Number 4, if employer A's transfer is approved and then B's transfer gets denied, can I still go to stamping with employer A's transfer approval? Sure, absolutely. If I get H-1B transferred to new employers A and B and got approval from both and get stamped by employer A, after returning to USA, can I switch to employer B? That's a lot more complicated situation. A lot more complicated. I think, personally, That's so difficult to answer. I think you'll be better off filing for a change of employers again. So I've got my visa stamp from employer A. I enter, I start working for A. I've gotten approval. Before I left, I already had an I-94. Can I start working for B? Probably, but I think you're better off just filing for a transfer over. Then MM says, I'm a U.S. citizen. I have an Indian nanny who is in USA on a visitor visa. She goes back and forth between USA and India. First of all, it is illegal for anybody on visitor visa to work in USA. It is also illegal for a U.S. citizen or anybody in USA to employ somebody who's working without authorization. Can I sponsor her green card or citizenship? You cannot sponsor her citizenship, but you may want to talk with a lawyer locally where you are. We don't deal with these kind of cases. Our work is very heavily focused on professional immigration, business-based immigration, investments, things like that. Very rarely we take cases like this. So can I sponsor her for green card? Probably yes, but it's a very long process. Citizenship, no. And by the way, while the green card is going on, she cannot stay and work here. Number two, are there any other options for her to stay in USA permanently? Other than getting married to a U.S. citizen, genuine marriage, not just to get her papers, I don't see any other options. Are there any other options to get her visa renewed besides going to India? No. If she stays in USA after her visa expires, is that a problem? Listen to the discussion before. Just before this question, I answered something about unlawful presence. If her I-94 expires, she stays in USA 180 days, she's barred from entering USA for 3 years. If she stays for 1 year, she's barred for 10 years. I own a small company. Can I file any kind of employment? No. Probably not. Again, you know, I'm saying this now based upon very generic facts that I have. I want you to have a consultation with a local lawyer. Is it a good idea to file for visa extension before 6 months expire? Is that a risk? See, the whole situation is illegal. You should not be involved in it at all. Okay? So really, I think first thing you need to inquire into is if there's any legal way to have her work. I don't see how. H-2B visa, very unlikely she's going to be able to get that. But that's something to look into. Okay? Karang 0225 says, what if a person holding an H-1B for Company A applies for transfer to Company B and then decides to stay for Company A and not go to Company B? The answer is no problem. So you're working for Company A, applied for transfer to Company B, transfer of H-1 came through, but you want to continue working for Company A. Is that a problem? No problem at all. That's fine. So just because the transfer is approved doesn't mean you have to take the transfer. Next question from Addy, KP7, DOL disqualified employer. Used to be on OPT working for employer A, client A through vendor A. So employer, vendor, client. Employer A filed for LCA H-1 for client A. Got my 797 approval, so they got their H-1 in October 2011. Later, Client A project was completed, and in Jan 2012, I got a new project for Client B. My employer did not file an LCA for the new client because my employer A was debarred from applying any LCA by the Department of Labor for the period of 1 year. Okay? My employer's debarment period got over. Now they've applied for an LCA. So it looks like you were working unlawfully without authorization for one of the clients since Jan 2012. Okay. What should I do? Change my employer immediately? I think you should. Should I stay with the current employer, apply for H-1B amendment? I think it's late to do that. And I think they've deliberately not filed the LCA knowing that they were not qualified to do so. What will happen to my experience? You can get the experience letter still. Even if you work without authorization, it's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. Okay. Is this going to affect your visa stamping? It should not, because I don't think the consulates are going to, you know, hold you personally responsible for this. So bottom line, in my opinion, you should be okay if you change companies. And when you change companies, I would actually recommend that your lawyer put a line in your paperwork explaining what happened so that you have made full disclosures to the government. Okay, now this again appears to be a reposting of the same question about the L1A EB1. So I think we are done with all our questions. Now we can start on the follow-ups. So what I'll do is I will give me 1 second. Let me ask people who have follow-up questions on what has been posted. Follow-up questions, please. Press 5-star on your phones. 5-star. Press 5-star if you have a follow-up question. 1, 2. Two people have follow-up questions. Give me 1 second. I'll unmute you. Okay, I tell what your area code is. You logged in at 12:24 p.m. Go ahead. I have unmuted.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes. Please speak up a little bit louder.
Hello, Rajiv. This is R. Katta. H-1B denied. I-94 expired.
What is your question number?
H-1B denied. I-94 expired.
H-1B denied. I have it. Sure.
Okay, I have like 3 follow-up questions.
Sure, go ahead.
You said NOID and denial are different, right?
Yes. See, notice of intent to deny does not carry any effect until it is actually denied. So the case is still pending while the NOID is sent, responded to, and still not decided.
So does NOID give 30 days to appeal?
NOID typically gives us 30 days to respond, not to appeal. So when we respond, then they take a few weeks and deny the case or approve the case.
So if I get a NOID, if I leave after 10 days, because I have 30 days to challenge or something,
I think that's
that,
fine.
Is that considered legal or illegal stay?
Perfectly legal.
And if I apply an appeal, then I am still again illegal, right? Even after 30 days, if I don't get any response from NOID.
Okay. If you have, I think you're using the wrong term. Let's get the terms right. So you got the NOID.
Mm-hmm.
On 25th day, you sent in your response. Now you're waiting for the result. Can you continue to stay? Yes, no problem.
Okay. And let's say if I got a denial directly.
Right.
Does that give any option to appeal, or does it say
there is an option to appeal, but do not remember filing an appeal gives you no legal status in US.
NOID is not an appeal, or
NOID is merely notice of intent to deny. What they are saying is, listen guys, we've looked at your case, we are planning to deny it. Give us a reason why we should not deny it.
Okay. And what we do, is that MTR or is it a different one we need?
No. MTR is motion to reopen or reconsider.
Okay.
Once the case is denied, after the NOID is issued, responded to, decided, you have options like MTR or appeal. Okay. Appeal goes to the higher office. MTR goes to the same office who decided the case. Actually, everything goes to the same office. But the bottom line is, an appeal is ultimately a request for the higher body to consider the denial.
But MTR it doesn't give any
to the same officer who denied the case in the first place.
But MTR doesn't give any legal stay, right?
Neither one of them gives you legal right to stay in the US. What people do is, today their case got denied, they file MTR/appeal. You can file them both in the same case.
Okay.
They continue to stay for 170-75 days, and if the case is not decided in their favor, they leave.
Okay, but they are still 175 days illegal to, they are unlawful.
It's not legal, but at least they are not incurring unlawful presence where it's permanently damaging them. It is not legal to stay. They are still illegal.
3 years of ban.
And they can be deported. If they are deported, they can't come back for 5 years.
Okay.
But normally, government might tolerate. There's no written policy. They might tolerate people in this situation, especially if they are not taking undue advantage, like working without authorization. Just waiting for the case to be decided, government might tolerate them.
Okay. Let's say I got a NOID, and can my employer withdraw the application, or is it mandatory to answer?
They can withdraw the application. So, not a good idea, usually.
Okay, not a good idea to withdraw, but to answer is the good idea.
I always think so, yes, sir.
So if I answer on the 25th day, I can still continue to stay. But if I leave before 25th day, that is a good way to leave, right?
That is perfectly legal, yes.
And let's say I got a denial, and from the day one, I am, like, after the denial, I am illegal, whether it's not within 180 days, but it's still within 180 days. So do I need to say I stayed unlawful presence in any, like, new forms further, like DS-160, 140 approvals, all those things?
Yes, sir. You have to disclose it. It has to be disclosed on OF-156 when you file it, or DS-156, they call it.
So does it affect any badly in future, or?
It can affect your tourist visa, but not visas like H1, H4, L1, L2.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I have one more question.
Let me take my next call.
This is regarding the two employers. When I have two employers, and let's say from both got approved, and I went for stamping for employer A, and I got a 221G. So, should I wait till that get approved, or can I take the other?
You can try taking the other employer. Depends upon the reason for 221G.
Okay, if that 221G got denied, can I still take for the other employer which is approved?
Yes,
or?
Sir. As long as the 221G was not denied based upon your education or something like that.
Okay. Thank you. That's all, Raju.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Area code 617. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, sir.
Hi. I'm calling regarding the question number one, which is for F2 to H1 visa.
Right.
So I understand that you have told me that I have to go outside the country, first thing. Second thing is I can go to Canada or I can fly to Canada and then give my I-94 or send my I-94 to USCIS?
No, not send your I-94. You see, what happens is when you go to contiguous territories, Canada, Mexico, you're allowed to go and not surrender your I-94 if your trip is less than 30 days.
Okay.
If you want to get a new I-94, you should affirmatively surrender the I-94. You should go to the INS officer, CBP officer, and say, I need to surrender my I-94 because I want a new one on my way back in.
Okay. But, like, you know, I was looking up for this information on the Canadian website. They say that if you are going to Canada, you require a visa as a tourist.
No, you're talking about Canadian law. That's different. I'm talking about coming back to U.S.
Okay, all right. Okay, so coming back to U.S., I should not necessarily submit I-94 if I plan to come on the same visa. But if I want to come on a different visa, I should give up my I-94 to the authorities or to the flight attendants, right?
Right. That is correct.
Okay.
I have to surrender your I-94.
Okay, and but I can still do that. I can go to Canada and then come back, right?
Well, you know, I want you to really discuss your case with your lawyers when the time comes. You have a lot of variations, including that F2 entry. Is your wife in U.S. to study when you came?
She is on OPT.
Yeah, okay, then you can use F2. Yeah, that's fine. Then F2 entry is
then fine. She can do what?
Your F2 entry is legal.
Yeah. F2 entry is legal. I think I have contacted you, like, you know, in the month of December and November also, and you have earlier suggested that I should get a letter from the USCIS that I want to specifically enter on F2. So I got an email from USCIS, and then at the port of entry they actually asked me the same thing, and I showed them the letter.
Yeah, I remember that. So we did the smart thing. We got something from CBP that said, okay, it's fine for you to enter. And at the port of entry, they did ask you, so it was good that you had that email, so they let you enter.
Yes.
Good,
yes. Correct. Yes.
Yeah, you're fine then. But what I would want you to do is, when your H1 is approved and you decide on a strategy, either log back in here, tell me exactly what your facts are at that time. Because, you know, many things, smallest things can change the way things are. Immigration law is so complex, even after practicing it for 20, 25 years, I still am constantly surprised by some of the things, the small things that can change facts law, or that can change the legal implications. So, for now, Canada is definitely an option, but by the time you come around to it, make sure you double check.
No, but like Rajiv, one thing I wanted to clarify, that I was on F1 before, like, you know, 8 years before I was on F1. And then after completing my studies, I went on to OPD. And then I had an employer who filed for an H1B. So from OPD to H1B, the change of status was possible like 6 or 8 years before without myself going outside the country. Now from F2 to H1B, if I want to start working and I am filing an amendment for a new employer or amendment, well, or I am...
You can do a change of status if that's...
But do I need to go outside the country?
No. When you're doing a change of status, you don't. See, when you listen back to the discussion, what I have said is this. To convert from F2 to H1, you have two choices. Either to go outside, come back on an H1 visa, or apply for a change of status within U.S. Unfortunately, change of status back to an H1 is as cumbersome as a new H1. Same paperwork, ditto the same paperwork. And the same risk. They can ask for an end client letter, they can deny the case. So, change of status is possible, and you can combine it with an amendment or a transfer. That's perfectly legal.
Okay. And anyway, like, you know, do you know how much time is it going to take for the change of status?
That depends upon what option you choose. Premium or...
Just take, like, you know, if I'm choosing a premium option.
A few weeks. It depends upon how many RFEs you get.
Okay.
It could be as little as 4 weeks. It could be as much as 14 weeks. Depends.
Okay, so net-net, if I am doing a change of status and if I am filing for an H-1B amendment, I don't need to go outside the country. I can stay working in the U.S., right?
How would you do that? If you're working for one employer, transfer over to another? Yes. If you're working for... Look, if you enter USA legally on an H-1B, I'm going to have to cut this short because I've got other people waiting. If you enter USA legally and start working for an employer in H-1B, then you apply for a transfer over to another employer. You can join them as soon as the case is filed. But you cannot do so if you are on F-2. You cannot start working right away if you're on F-2.
No, I understand that. I cannot start working on F2. Like, you know, once the petition get approved or once they have a number, then I can start working, right?
No, you cannot. You have to be on H1B status in USA in order to start working. Gotta go, sir. I'll take the next call. Good luck.
Okay.
Area code 512. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This question is about the traveling on H-4 visa after using EAD. Yeah, you answered it is perfectly legal to travel, but I just want to...
In my view, it is. You can double-check with CBP, and you can also read the Cronin Memorandum yourself and have your lawyers talk about it.
Oh, okay. So I just want to explain you the situation again. So she's going to work on EAD, then travel out of the country, coming back on H-4, and then she's going to start working on EAD again.
I understood the situation. I understood.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome. If you listen to the recording, I actually went through the timeline. I said, when you leave, first of all, the moment you start, your wife starts using EAD, she's on H-4, on authorized period of stay. The moment she leaves USA and re-enters, she's back on H-4. Then when she starts using EAD again, she's back on authorized period of stay.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Area code 703. Go ahead, please.
Rajiv, sorry, this is Divya here. I just realized that, you know, I put in the same numbers as people who posted, so I haven't actually posted a question.
That's okay. Guys, anybody who has posted, who's not even posted, any new questions, anything at all, press 5-star on your phone. Divya, stay on the phone for a second.
Okay. So very quickly, can you hear me?
Just 1 second, man.
Yeah.
5-star if you have any question at all, new or old. Okay. Divya, there are two other people, so we are okay. Go ahead. What is your question?
Okay. Yeah, very quickly. So, you know, I filed a 485 while working on an H-1B, but then I switched to an F-1 to do a PhD. You know, I went to Ottawa, got it switched, all of that. So 2 years after I started the PhD on the F-1, I got the 485 approved. I applied for a whole bunch of jobs, including my earlier job, but no luck. So I continued with the PhD. So I was in India for 6 months, these past 6 months, to do my dissertation. I'm back in the U.S. now for about a month, but I need to be back in India again for about 6 weeks. When I re-entered the U.S., they've put this out for 6 months. I mean, they've written that on my passport, and they asked me also, like, why I was away for so long, and they were okay with my answer, seemingly. So now that I'm going back to India for about 6 weeks, I was wondering if, A, I should apply for a re-entry permit just to be on the safer side. Yeah.
I think that's a smart thing to do.
Okay. Do I need to wait until I get the re-entry permit, or can I just apply and leave?
Nobody waits for the re-entry permit, but you'll have to wait for the biometrics.
Oh, okay. Okay. And that would take a while.
You have two options. You can have the re-entry permit mailed to the U.S. consulate closest to wherever you are, and you pick it up in India. Or you can have it mailed to an address in USA and have it either FedEx or delivered to you personally.
Okay. So that would be the better option. Okay. So the only other question I had is that, you know, the fact that I'm a green card holder who hasn't worked in that job, does that create problems with the port of entry, or is it something that I should care about at naturalization?
Very interesting situation. I think you are reasonably safe. There is no law on this issue that I know.
Okay.
You are reasonably safe because you did try to get a job in a same or...
Yeah, I have documentation to prove all of that. So
I think we've spoken before, haven't we?
Exactly, multiple times, yeah.
And we did talk about, and I did say that you should keep some documentation that you applied for.
Right.
I think you will have an interesting defensive situation. I think you'll be okay. But it's very difficult for me to predict what the future will hold. Personally,
right,
I would not totally agree. What choice do we have anyway?
Sorry?
I said, what choice do we have anyway? It's not like...
Exactly. Right. So only one last question, Rajiv, very quickly, is that how long does it usually take for that, you know, the fingerprinting thing to come through?
You have to call USCIS. It's a few weeks process.
Ooh, okay.
We can expedite it for you if you have a good reason.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you so much. Okay.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Bye. Okay, guys, last two questions of the day. In the order people logged in. Area code 860, please go ahead.
Hi, Rajiv. Happy New Year. So this is Hanuman. A few questions. So my lab has failed on September 10th, 2012. Along with me, there are four more applications have been sent from my company. Everyone got the response on the third week of November. But my lawyer says that they haven't received my case. And also, they sent a follow-up email to the DOL. And says that the case is still pending. So, but the DOL website says that you know they are in the current date on the 5th, September 15th, the crossing of the
line. Let me interrupt you for 1 second. Was your case filed electronically or was it mailed in?
Electronically.
Okay. All right. First of all, when a case is filed electronically, your lawyer can send you a screenshot that shows what your case's status is.
Okay.
So ask for
I got the case number, so they haven't sent me the status.
Ask them for a screenshot. It tells you what the case's status is. Usually it'll say pending or whatever.
Okay. Okay, so I mean, so still the general process will
it's
take 4
unusual
months.
It's not unusual for the government to have 10 cases filed the same day, one gets stuck and 9 get approved, or one gets into audit, 9 don't. That's not unusual. It happens all the time.
Okay. Okay. And also that my employer is not paying an H4P, so paying by me for my wife, is any problem with no, H4P?
The employer is not required to pay for H4.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Okay. And one last question. That's
sure.
For I-140, so my life is, we don't need any previous company's employee experience letters. So, but I heard that, you know, that the I-140 requires an experience letters from the previous company.
Only to the extent the labor certification requires it. For example, you could have 20 years of experience, and the labor
okay.
cert requires only 3 years of experience. Then you need to document only 3 years, not 20 years.
Not 20. Okay, so my labor certification needs two years of experience.
And that's all
so.
You need to
okay. But the 2 years I currently working for my current employer will work out.
I don't know how they usually cannot count that, so I don't know what they are doing, unless it's a promotion case, or I don't know how they are doing that.
Okay, but they haven't asked me. Okay, I'll check with them. Thank you so
yeah,
much.
You should check with them, because experience, I mean, your lawyers sound like they're experienced people. This is a very small, simple matter. I don't think they should make a mistake with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. All right, guys. Last question from it must be either a Skype or a voiceover IP. You logged in at 12:24 p.m. Go ahead.
Hello, Raju. Sorry to bother you. This is Akata again.
Yes.
Yeah. You said like NYD has 30 days time to like answer it, right?
Right.
So, can I work in that time?
No. Wait. You have an H1 extension case, right?
Yes.
Extension was timely filed.
Yes. On like 5 days
and
before.
It's not been, you see, you can work up to 240 days.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can work as long as you're within that 240 day period.
And you saying NYD is not a denial?
NYD is not a denial.
So even if I get NOID today or tomorrow, I can still work.
You're asking me the same question in several different ways.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Do you have anything else to ask me?
Can I apply, can I answer in the premium process? Can I change it to premium process when answering NOID?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think you can try. Technically, any case can be premiumed at any stage.
Okay.
Okay.
And one more last one, Raju. If I
it's going to have to be the last question because I've pretty much spent the whole time talking.
This is the last one. If I had a H1 transfer in premium with some other employer, can I anyway work here without going out and get stamped and get the new I-94 or I need to?
That question is impossible for me to answer. Chances are, if you apply for a transfer now, you will have to go outside U.S. for stamp. Unless this case gets approved.
Okay.
Because the chain of your status must remain unbroken. If it is broken anywhere in the past, they usually will not give you status within U.S.
Okay.
So applying for a transfer now is probably not going to prevent having to go outside USA unless this case gets approved before the second transfer is approved.
Okay.
Good luck to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Raju. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Good talking with all of you, and I'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Thank you for being here, folks.